You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. Tuesday, March the 30th, and many happy returns to two titans of the training game. John Gosden, we spoke much about him yesterday. 70 today. He's got to go some to get to Mick Easterby. 90 years old, been training since 1961. No signs of slowing. Truly, he is unique, and he will be speaking to me a little later in this podcast. Big day for British racing yesterday, as I said 24 hours ago. Owners were allowed back on racecourses, and plenty of them took up that offer at racetracks around Britain. And amateur riders were back as well, and back in the winners' enclosure. And it was the beginning of point-to-point racing, which continues today to make up for lost time. Cornelius Lycett is my guest this morning. Cornelius, we are, of course, grateful for small mercies at the moment, and yesterday was a day of such gratitude.
Yeah, amateur riders under the latest situation as far as COVID regulations being gradually reduced, allowed back in three point-to-points on Monday. So point-to-pointing has, in both Britain and Ireland, has been severely affected by COVID. In Ireland, I'm not sure whether the roadmap out is clear at all. But in the UK, having started, stopped, and now we're restarting again, three point-to-points on Monday to get going. And the season can now hopefully gallop all the way through until the beginning of, well, almost the middle of June, in fact, the last fixture. I'm off today to Maysmore races, or in fact, Gloucester races at Maysmore. I've lost count, to be perfectly honest, how many races there are today. I think it's definitely 10 and could be 11, or it could be definitely 9 and could be 10. A lot to look forward to at Maysmore, and particularly, I have to say, in the Ladies Open race, which is scheduled for 3 o'clock. And number 9 in this race is Show Me the Way, ridden by Hannah Lewis. And the significant thing about Show Me the Way is that she's owned by her breeder, Clive Bennett, who also bred Shishkin. And this is a half-sister to Shishkin by presenting. So a lot to look forward to at Gloucester Races. And just demonstrating three fixtures yesterday, this today, fixtures over the Easter holiday just coming up, how important and how significant and how it's not just people running around a field in the middle of nowhere. This is important stuff. The three divisions of the maiden today, in fact, there are four maidens in all, will be significant in terms of selling horses on. So point-to-pointing isn't just some kind of a sort of peripheral thing. It is important, it is significant, and it is going again. And people involved, particularly those involved professionally, because there's some quite big strings involved, really looking forward to getting into full stride.
Might be the amateur branch of the sport, as you're saying, Cornelius, but it is certainly got more than a whiff of professionalism about it, particularly in those bigger stables. One such big stable is that is run by prolific amateur rider Gina Andrews and her husband Tom Ellis. They sent out 11 horses across the country yesterday, and Gina joins me now. Gina, it was a pretty good day.
We had five winners from 11 runners, and all the others were placed as well, so a very good start.
Yeah, I mean, even better news is that you rode three of those five winners and your brother Jack rode the other two. You haven't ridden since December, when you had a horrible fall at that final flight of hurdles at Cheltenham. We were very worried about you. How difficult has it been coming back, then being fit to ride, and then having to kick your heels for quite a while?
It's very, to be honest. It's just been a lot of work with very little reward, really. And luckily, yesterday, all the hard work for everyone's finally paid off.
And how did you feel going out and putting the silks on for the first time? Was it a slightly strange feeling? Because you've been pretty non-stop now for basically a decade or more.
Yeah. It was a bit, to be honest. Probably the longest I've ever gone without riding, especially in the winter, because normally it's every single weekend and then the odd ride in the week as well. So, yeah, it was a bit strange.
And the injury is all completely healed and you feel good again?
Yeah, no, absolutely fine. I had an operation to put a plate under my eye and in my cheekbone And I'd been to see a neurologist and everything since because I was concussed too. But, you know, I've had plenty of time to get over it. So, yeah, all good now.
And as you say, you've got a big yard of horses and a lot of graft. And for people who don't really appreciate just how professional the point-to-point season has become, just tell us a little bit about the sort of day-to-day workings of yours and Tom's outfit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the same work goes into a point-to-point yard as a national hunt yard, really. You know, we've got around 45 horses in now, so we've got a really big team. And, you know, a lot of effort's gone into it from everyone. And to be stopped for as long as we had been was just a nightmare, to be honest. And thankfully, our owners had been brilliant. Not one of them had suggested that they might send their horse under rules. They just stuck on in there and, you know, we kept paying the bills and, you know, held on tight. So we're very, very thankful to all of them.
And there's been so much debate in the last couple of weeks about point-to-pointing as a nursery for champions in Ireland. I know you and Tom run a very professional yard where you have a lot of young horses that you bring on. Do you think that is going to become a bigger and better thing in the UK in coming seasons?
I hope so. There seems to be, you know, two or three more trainers every season, you know, trying to do what the Irish do. And hopefully, you know, eventually we'll be at the same level as the Irish. But I think we'll always be slightly different to them, whereas, you know, there is still beyond just amateurs that do it for fun, whereas in Ireland it is just purely for selling, really. You know, we've probably still got more owners that do it just for a day out and fun than we do have for selling, but there's a few more now that are, you know, want to get involved with having a young horse to sell on and, you know, potentially make some money.
And it's been, I mean, I've thought it was quite nice during the time when amateurs couldn't ride in hunter chases. Obviously it would have been infuriating for you, but at least you could kind of keep it in the family because your sister Bridget was riding a lot of your horses during that spell.
Definitely, it didn't feel it, and away we couldn't ride it wasn't great, but it was nice that Bridge could, and Harry as well, he rode one too, so that it was fine. The owners were more than happy for that, you know, as long as Bridge or Harry would ride them, you know, it was the next best thing, basically.
And Bridget, your sister, rode Late Night Pass in the Cheltenham Fox Hunters. What a mighty run that was.
Oh, I know. Coming down the hill, you just couldn't believe sort of he's serving it up to Billaway. Tom's mum bred him, and Tom rode his mother as well to win on his mother. So it was, you know, it was lovely to have bred a horse, you know, to be so good, really. We never imagined he would turn out to be as good as he is, really. He's improved every year. I think it took him about 5 attempts to actually win a race, and he's just got better and better every year.
And you'll be on him at Aintree?
Yep. Fingers crossed. That's like the next goal, isn't it, really? Everyone. I've had a few rides around there, but I've got round, but I've never been that competitive. So it'll be nice to actually go there with a horse with a live chance. He's a strong traveller. And you know, I think probably suit him better, to be honest, and he jumps very well too, so, you know, hopefully everything will be right there for him.
I mean, I can't let you go without us, because the Harry you mentioned, of course, for those who don't know, is Harry Skelton, your brother-in-law. He's now 6-4 on to win the Jockeys Championship. It looks to me like he's enjoying it more than anyone else I've ever seen in a similar position, and B, he seems to be pretty confident that he can win it.
Oh, well, that's just a Skelton trait, I think, isn't it? he's properly going for it, and I wish him all the best of luck. Like, everyone's getting behind him now, so I really hope he can do it.
Gina Andrews there in the horse box on the way to Maysmore Park, which is where you are going, Cornelius, as you were saying at the beginning of the programme. Gina talking about her brother-in-law, Harry Skelton, and he is now odds-on favourite to win the Jockeys' Championship.
At the moment, Brian Hughes retains, as we sit here recording this podcast, an increasingly narrow lead over Harry Skelton, with Harry Cobden still in touch. What's striking about Harry Skelton is that a majority of his rides are for his brother Dan, his prolific training brother Dan, and they've got, I think, 5 horses between them of Harry Skelton's 7 mounts at Warwick today. And people are inclined to think, I know it stung one or two supporters of the Skelton stable the other day to hear a pundit on television say well, this championship is going to be settled between Brian Hughes and his agent, Richard Hale, and Dan Skelton and Harry Skelton. Well, there is an agent attached to Harry Skelton, Ian Popham, who used to be a jump jockey. Now, Harry's only ridden for, I think, 20 trainers or so, so a total this season. But Ian Popham is an important part of the whole process at Skelton HQ. He, as well as managing the rides from Harry's point of view, and Bridget rides plenty of the horses as well, he's also very much involved in the placing of the horses. So very much a sort of a behind-the-scenes character, but a significant part of this whole thing.
Well, that Jockeys' Championship sure to provide some lively chat and debate as the season draws to a close. Good luck to all three, Skelton, Hughes and Harry Cobden, who are going for it. Now, as I said at the beginning of the programme, Mick Easterby, who's been training since 1961, Britain's longest-serving trainer, perhaps the world's longest-serving trainer, is 90 today. Many happy returns, Mick Easterby.
Thank you very much, my friend. Thank you very much indeed. Wonderful, isn't it? Wonderful day. Everything's wonderful. I'd like to go on to think I'm going to go on to 100. Bloody, I'll be a grand bugger then, won't I? Oh, dear, oh, dear. Thanks very much anyway.
And when you started training in 1961?
61, yes.
Could you have imagined you'd be attacking it with the same gusto now as you did then?
Well, I've never thought about it. The thing is, I can't give up. I'm driven. I've tried to give up and tried to do less, but son's helping me a lot now in Easter. You know, I've asked him for 10 years to take a licence out, joint licence with me, and he wouldn't do it. He says, I want to wear you out first, because if I don't, if you get a bit of a breather, you'll live for a day ever. He wants to get rid of me. I thought the only way to get rid of me is keep me stressed. But it hasn't worked. So he decided to take a licence out himself. Unbelievable, isn't it?
So he's going to take it. He's going to take his own licence out, is he, David?
No, he's taking a joint with me.
And when's that going to start?
As it started, as we speak.
What, as in today?
Yeah, well, when he gets, when it's come through his licence. Marvellous, isn't it? So I'm driven. Hey, love you, baby.
So, go on, Mick. What's your secret? Just give me a little bit.
The secret is, what's the secret? Secret is not to get down, fight back. I love to be challenged. I like to do something in my life I've never done before. I built a house. I want to build a house. I said, see if I can be a builder. Of course I'm a builder. I can build houses like anybody could. Life is common sense. But when you do something you've never done before, expect to make mistakes. People are frightened to make mistakes. They're frightened to go into these things. Oh, we might make a mistake. What does it matter if you make a mistake? You can write it. I've made more mistakes than most folks in my life, but don't bother about it. As long as you don't bother about your mistakes, you go a long way. So the thing is that if I make a mistake, it doesn't bother me. Oh, well, try and write it. I shouldn't have done it. I designed I made a house here. I designed it myself. What a bloody mistake I made. I won't do it again.
And what's the next challenge, Mick?
Next challenge is live forever.
If anyone can do it, I reckon you might be able to.
Well, I'm going to try anyway.
Tell me this. How many horses have you got to run this flat season? How many would you have in training now?
You know, I've never looked, to be honest. I'll own myself. Horsing my own. Oh, 80 or 90, I suppose. I'm a dealer at heart. I'm a dealer. I love a deal of any kind.
And I guess you just never lose that love for a deal either, do you?
You see one every minute
of every day.
I'm into property now. I bought quite a bit of property for my two daughters. I started penniless. I got myself 2,500-acre gallop together, paid for. I've got my daughters. They're over £5 million of property. I bought them, paid up and finished. My two daughters have about $500,000 a year income. How's that for you? Too fucking much for them. They've already wasted.
So,
and they haven't touched a penny yet, because I have the strings. And if you don't touch money, it grows. You know, which when you spend it, if you spend a pound, you haven't spent one, you spent two. You're going to find another one to replace it. How's that for you?
So are you saying the secret is to not spend it, but you've got to spend it to make it, haven't you?
To a point. I like a return. The best way to lose money, buy very expensive horses. You know that very well. Fuck me. You know fucking well it's like, don't you? Fucking hell, fire. Okay. Unbelievable. I've had some good deals.
What's been your best deal, Mick?
Best one, I think one of the best would be, also went to Russia. Gentleman's deal went to Russia. I gave 24,000 or 5,000 for him, I think. I sold a bit of a share in him. I won 150,000 state money with him. I sold him for $250,000 to go to Russia. And had him stood 2 years. I raced him as well. And he won the Winter Derby. And I sold him to go to Russia. I did the impossible. And my old pal, young Dunlop, what they call him, Dunlop trains in Newmarket.
Ed Dunlop.
Ed, I like Ed well. He put his arm around Mick. He says, Mick, this one will beat you. I says, well, you didn't realise I had two strings to be bow. He's got a man that won the Oaks. Very, very good bred horse. I thought, well, if he fails, I'm pretty understood, you see. Mm. That's what he didn't see. And Jill Richardson, you know Jill, don't you?
Oh, Jill Richardson, yeah.
An American chap came to buy him, and he missed him. Sales out, he wasn't there in time. So I bought him. He says, oh, you leave it to me, I don't make. He says, he always takes a profit, they take a thousand anything. He says, so she wanders up quietly. Oh, I see what, already, you know. I'm having to get your profit on that. I said, oh, I don't know. So let's not get you a thousand. Oh, so can you? Christ, I said, you see. And so she goes back to the shepherds, I think I gave her £1,000 profit. I said, I don't think I will, Jill. I don't think I will, you know. She just quietly played it cool. And she made me two. What would you take? I'm American, I want to buy it. I can get you £5,000. What's the hands up with, she said. Poor old Jill. She finished up beating me £10,000. I said, Jill, for once in my life, I'm not going to take the money. I'm going to take the profit. Well, there's something very well wrong with you, she says. I saw it.
Now, listen, how are you going to spend the rest of your birthday?
Walking about, seeing things get done properly. I have a lovely granddaughter. Trouble is, I can't stop her talking.
Now, is this Joe who's riding all the winners?
Yes. You can put that. I have a lovely granddaughter.
I'm sure I saw a clip recently where she said she was your favourite granddaughter.
Yeah. Well, I make them all favourites. You know, I keep changing every week. My loyal friends, I love all of you. Just keep kicking. Don't get down. Keep looking up. Look up to the sky. Hear the story of the two gentlemen watching a cricket match one summer. Two old gentlemen. Sat on the deck chair, Nick and Mick. And Mick says to Nick, looking up in the sky, and says, yes, it'll play cricket where we're going. Point up to heaven. So Nick decided he would, Tommy was going, so where Nick went to heaven. And he says, I will come back and report. And tell you what it's like. Sure enough, a couple of days later, I sat on my own, Mick sat on his own, lonely. Says, Mick, he says, I have good news for you and bad news for you. I've been to look. He came back as a fairy over his head. He said, good news is, they do play cricket up here. Oh, yes, that's interesting, Mick said. What is the bad news? You've been picked for Saturday 11 next Saturday. You know some more?
Oh, go on.
You know another one, I'll tell you another one. Two old lads have been very, very naughty all their lives. And decided they want to go to heaven. The Lord says, anyway, get to heaven, up those golden stairs, go to the golden gate and knock. But as you go up the stairs, you chalk all the wrong deeds you've done on those stairs. So where my pal went, the way he went. So his little pal got lonely, so well, I better go and join him. So he's chalking away up these steps, right to go to heaven. He met his pal coming back down. He says, hey, where are you going? So we're going for more chalk. Bye-bye. Best of luck.
The truly inimitable Mick Easterby. My thanks to him and happy birthday. So it is Tuesday, which means we go around the bloodstock world with our friends at Weatherby's and their nhstallions.co.uk website dedicated to promoting National Hunt stallions, a new resource complementing their stallion books and global stallion app and serving as a much needed resource to support National Hunt breeders in Ireland, France and Britain. And today we head to White Mount Stud in County Kilkenny to check in with Ronnie O'Neill. White Mount Stud, a family-run farm, stood Shannon Day originally, and more recently, the brilliant Stowaway, who had a sensational Cheltenham Festival with a 1-2 in the Grade 1 Brown Advisory Novice Chase, Monkfish beating Fiddler on the Roof. He also sired Put the Kettle On and Tell Me Something Girl and The Shunter and Kilcrut, finished second in the Champion Bumper. He sadly is no longer with us, but he's left an amazing legacy. And the stallions now at White Mount at Affinity Feel Like Dancing and Valleyran. You must have got so much pleasure from watching Cheltenham, Ronnie.
It was fantastic to watch, especially like when you see them winning top class over 2 miles, and they could win over 3 miles Grade Ones, and see fillies winning as well. Like that really was great. These two fillies win big races.
This is it. I mean, Put the Kettle On was brilliant in the Queen Mother Champion Chase, incredibly tough, but you had her toughness and her speed, and then you had that extraordinary class and stamina of Monkfish, who looks a genuine Gold Cup horse for next year, and you had Fiddler on the Roof, the second in that Brown Advisory Chase as well. Tell Me Something Girl looked all pace and a turn of foot in the Mayor's Hurdle. Well, and what can you say about the Shunter? He just wins everything.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? But one of the most amazing things about Stowe is that you would imagine the way he was bred and the staying type of mares that he got, that they'd all need at least 3 miles. But they were very, very effective over 2 miles, which was incredible. Like, you see, to win the Queen Mother and go back to like a Champagne Fever of a Rosalier mare that was bred to be an out-and-out stayer, and he was better over 2 miles than probably anywhere else. That was the amazing thing about him, the foot he put into his stock, from the way that he was bred. And it's just amazing what he could do.
I'm always intrigued as to why people who own stallions acquire the ones that they do. Now, Stowaway wasn't going to be an obvious success. You stood him for just €1,000, and I don't suppose you were being knocked over with interest at the very beginning, were you?
No, that was the biggest regret about Stowaway, is that he didn't get support. In his first 10 years, he had little or no support. Like, I had... We got him, I think, in 2011, which was the year of foot and mouth disease. And this horse I had before that died of a colic, Shandy, but he wasn't covering much anyway. But we got heard about Stowaway, and before we got the deal finalised, the foot and mouth ban came in, so we weren't able to get him back from England after the Guineas, which meant it was then the May before we got to cover mares. And that year, I think he did 12 folds the following year. I think 7 were out of our own mares, which were ordinary enough mares at the time. And for the first 10 years, 8 or 9 years anyway, I think his biggest crop was about 22. Like, I unfortunately that time only had about 7 moderate mares, and he was only getting middling mares. He was only, at that time, he was only standing about $500 or $600 getting from at that stage. But still, there was no rush of mares to him.
Amazing. And then he ended up covering 300 mares a year and was the busiest in Europe by about 50 mares. So what was the turning point? What was it
The first good horse he bred was a horse called Western Leader. We bred him, and they wouldn't take him for the sales as a 3-year-old. They said the pedigree was too weak. And afterwards, that mare bred 5 black type horses, But at the time, they said the pedigree was too weak. So we ended up breaking him, and we ran him in a bump in Turles. My son won his first ride on him, and he got fifth in it. And Shaq Hannah, which is my daughter's partner, spotted him, and he got to Barry O'Connell, and Barry bought him. And I think Barry won two or three bumpers on him. And then he went over Hurls, and he won at the Christmas meeting in Leopardstown, and he won the Grade 2 then, the Purcell Hurl in Turles. And then he went over to run in the Stephen Hurl in Antrim. And he severed his tendon at the second last hurl, and he still finished second. And even at that stage, they still weren't coming to Stowey. And it was the following spring then, I think it was in January 2011, in Leopardstown meeting. It was real bad weather, and everything was called off part of racing in Leopardstown. And it was televised on RT, televised at the race and all the channels. And Stowey won, Hidden Cyclone won the feature race of the day. And Ted Welch said after the race that he was by Stowey, that Ronnie O'Neill brought him down in Kilkenny, and that he's the phenomenal sire, and that he's getting winners all over the place, and he also has a runner in the bumper. And Horse Hybrid, he was full birth to Western Leader, and they both won, and that really put the horse, ignited him, and he heard him come in small numbers in there to be in the busiest sire in Europe in 2011.
It was an amazing story, and the rest is history, really.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Champagne Fever then came on and won, I don't know, was it the following year, he won the Cheltenham Bumper and came back then and won the Supreme Novice. And, like, he was covering 4 mares a day at that stage, and we're turning away another 4 mares every day. The whole country just wanted to cover the mares with him. But it was a pity, in a way, that I didn't have... The mares I had at him were modern mares, but he upgraded them, like... Western Leaders and Mother, he should be 5 black type winners. He bred Hidden Cycle and won 17 races. Like, he really upgraded the few mares I had and left me in a better position. Now, if Zoe had to ride now, he'd be champion sire in no time because of the sword he'd have got, which he didn't get in those years.
Now, what I want to know is, who is the next Stowey? You've got 3 stallions at the moment. Affinity.
Without any doubt.
Affinity is going to be the next one, is he?
Yep, without any doubt. Because, like, Stowey, as I said, was covering very, very little. But Affinity got 100 mares the first year he was here. He covered 200 last year and 200 the year before. And this is only the end of March, and he's 81 mares covered as of last night. The cold country is getting the stunning foals, stunning 3-year-olds. This is first crop of 3-year-olds. You watch out for him, as it says, they're terrific-looking horses. He stamps all his stocks. He's great-looking. Great looking individual, and all his stock, they're big or brown, with beautiful horses. And the, what makes him better is that he's a stallion's pedigree. I was the same mare as Soldier Fortune, but he's 3 parts world because he's by See the Stars, Soldier Fortune, Galileo, and his dad was a half sister to Sholikov, that 2 gold winners in Cheltenham. So, he's bred to be a stallion, and he's getting the looks. He's getting a magnificent looking individual. So, if they can run, definitely they're in big business because he's getting great support. And like Stowey, he's getting wonderful support. We also have Valoran here. He's got a great he got a black type winner for Paul Nichols in Ages before Christmas of his first 4-year-old crop. Knapper's Hill. I think Nichols said at the time he's going for the entry bumper on national meeting, and he's letting him off then for the summer. And he should be an exciting prospect for next year. And also we've got Feel Like Dancing. He came in from France last year. He was bred in England by Lady Bamford. And John Gosden trained. He was best ruler, I suppose. He was second to Leading Light in the Queen's Vase in Ascot, but he's a powerful built horse that's getting a big individual, so I'd be confident enough he could be a good sire too. He's already got winners in France on the flat, over walls and over fences, so this is his first crop of foals on the ground here in Ireland, but he's still a young horse. I think he's only 10 or 11, so no, they're exciting, but I say Affinity, without any doubt, he's head and shoulders over it, and I've seen anyway.
Thanks to Ronnie O'Neill, To Mick Easterby, of course, and to Gina Andrews at the beginning of the programme. And Cornelius Slicer, who's rather been squeezed out this morning, but is now off to Maysmore Park to do the live stream of the Point to Point, which you'll be able to watch on Facebook Live, is still with me and is going to give you a tip for today.
I am going to take you to the Quinbet Casino Handicap Hurdle Race at Newcastle.
No, I thought I was just getting a trip to the casino then for a minute.
Oh, right. No, I'm going to take you to a very competitive handicap hurdle race at Newcastle, run over a distance of 2 miles. And there's I love a horse being ridden by a jockey, a young jockey who works for the stable, so therefore gets a £10 allowance. And Nye Bevan, which is owned by the Neild family, is ridden by Jamie Neild, claiming 10 in the 130 at Newcastle. And Nye Bevan, trained by Nigel Twiston Davis, has got a Neil Holland-trained hot pot against it. But Nye Bevan, I thought, is just beginning to show enough to indicate he'll be winning before too long. Nye Bevan, number 3, 130, Newcastle, the Quinbet Casino Handicap Hurdle.
Cornelius, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again to do it tomorrow. That was Tuesday, March the 30th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.